Hello, this is KGVM's Health and Happiness program at 95.9 FM and KGVM.org on the internet. Our main topic is mental health, but we have varied programs about the general health and welfare of the community. We are brought to you in part by the Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee. Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist, and myself, Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, are your hosts. Dr. Suzanne will now introduce today's program.
Good evening. When he was 12 years old, Winston Churchill's parents were told he could not manage a regular school curriculum any longer. Something similar happened to Nelson Rockefeller as a young person. Today, we might call this condition or their status neurodivergent. It's kind of a new term, and it is a non-medical term that describes people whose brains develop or work differently for some reason. This means the person has different strengths and struggles from people whose brains develop or work more typically. While some people who are neurodivergent have medical condition, it also happens to people where there hasn't been a diagnosis identified. Some of the conditions that are most common include autism spectrum disorder, Asperger's syndrome, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, Down syndrome, dyscalculia, which is difficulty with math, dyslexia, which is difficulty with reading, and again, disfluency, commonly known as stuttering, was discussed by a leading researcher a while back as one of those neurodivergent situations. So today, we have with us Dee Metrick, who works with a population of people who might go about things a little differently, and they know how to provide and help those people, and they work with a group called REACH. Welcome, Dee. It's so good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate it.
I was pretty much in awe of all the different services you provide, because there's a part of our community that without your help would not be able to achieve so many successes. And so we'd like you to kind of maybe start off by telling us, what is REACH? It's R-E-A-C-H, which I think of as Reach for the Stars.
Yes. Well, REACH is a nonprofit here in Bozeman, Montana that serves Gallatin County. We have 90 adults with developmental disabilities who are in our services, and they receive residential, vocational, and transportation supports specific to their needs and abilities. So the people in our services have some special needs, and they get to set goals for what they want in their life. And some of the clients live in REACH-owned housing. We have 21 vehicles that we use for transportation. We have a work center, and we're proud to say that we have a 94% community employment rate, which means that 94% of the clients in our services who want to work out in the community have jobs in the community. So you'll see them working in hotels, in grocery stores, Mesa Labs, Gibson Guitar. We have all sorts of places where our clients work, and they also work here in our work center. So they have jobs, they have friends, they have recreational activities, and we get to be part of their lives as they achieve their goals.
We have a brother within our family who was developmentally disabled, and many years ago, one of the very first of this kind of facility, we found that, and he was able to go there. He was getting so depressed. And the research tells us that without this kind of support, this population is very depressed and often suicidal. So he was in that category, having just lived at home with little socialization, without a job, not wondering what he would do with his life. And a program like this helped him to find housing. He had his own apartment with, there were house parents down the hall, but each person lived independently. And it was just beyond all of our dreams for him. The place was called Rainbow Hill. And we were pretty nervous the first night we took him because he was by himself for the first time, and we thought he might have difficulties. So we checked on him the next day, and he was bubbling over with happiness. He said, "It's the first time I've had my own key," and we hadn't thought about that. It was like a major, major hurdle for him. And he made wonderful friends down the hall. There was his friend Carl, who, while he had cerebral palsy and was slow of movement and somewhat slow of speech, was able to drive a car and had gone to college. And Carl, actually, and Clois, to this day, have been friends and have traveled together, even on train trips. So what you've given is not just something superficial. It's an entire life for a whole segment of our population. We're so proud of your work, Dee.
Thank you. Yeah, it is quite a gift to be able to work in this field. And one of the joys is, you know, the services that we provide are lifelong. And I've been at Reach for 24 years. I started very young, and I've gotten to achieve some of my goals alongside some of the clients. And there really are these very deep, long relationship, and the community is, it's strong and it's fun and it's very interesting. And it, I think people don't realize what a gift it is to have a community with people. And Reach was founded in 1974 when some parents and some special educators came together. There wasn't anything like Reach at the time, and the deinstitutionalization movement was happening. And originally they were going to start what they were just calling an activity center. But they found that the clients wanted to work. They wanted jobs. They wanted to be productive and a productive part of society. And so very quickly, the activity center transformed into a work center where the people were able to develop job skills, which they now teach in the integrated school system, but also to go get jobs and work in the community. And one of the things that has been fascinating since the 70s, the life expectancy for people with special needs and developmental disabilities has just skyrocketed, because I'm sure you talk about this a lot on your show. Having community support and feeling of belonging helps people live longer. And we have found that. We have a gentleman who has been in our services since 1975, and he is 82 now, and he is the most senior member of our Reach community in both ways, in longevity at Reach and also in age. So
that is fantastic. Wow. Mm-hmm.
What are his limitations? If, well, maybe that's not a good word. They
what
sound
are
like
his
they might even be strengths.
Yeah, well, he, you know, he's actually a very independent man and very outgoing and gregarious. He's aging. So when he, for a lot of his time at Reach, we have four levels of care. And the most independent is called supported living. And those are people who rent or own their own apartments or houses in the community. And we go in and provide, you know, anywhere from, you know, 2 to 20 hours a week of support. And we help people with things like balancing their checkbooks or getting rides to the grocery store. Of the 90 people in our services, only one can drive. So we do a lot of driving people around, but we help, you know, make sure that there's nothing rotting in their fridge or they're not being exploited by a member of the community. This gentleman was in supported living services for a long time. And now as he's aged, you know, when you're 80, he's 82 and he's not as mobile as he used to be. So, you know, there's more supports now with things like housekeeping and food prep. And there's a lot of medical appointments. We have a very deep relationship with members of the medical community here. We do a lot of of assistance with medical care. And that's one of the challenges for people with special needs. There's not always, but frequently a little more medical assistance needed and health issues. So we do a lot of that as well. But he's pretty, again, I don't, he couldn't have a job, for example, being an accountant, but he does really well here in our work center. We do some work on assembly stuff, and he's had multiple jobs in the community. I can't say too much because he's easily identifiable. He's a really popular guy, and I have to maintain privacy, but
everyone loves him, it sounds like.
Yeah. And that's I am a believer in neurodiversity and, encouraging people to figure out who they are and what they need and what they want makes the world better. If we can all find what brings us joy and have people around to help us get there. I think if everybody had the supports that Reach has, we'd probably have world peace, but
yes.
Not everybody gets to have a community of folks around saying, where do you want to live? What kind of job do you want? And how are we going to help you get there? And it is quite an honor to get to be part of people's success.
I love hearing about that gentleman. And I was just thinking as a basic question, as a speech pathologist, if people encounter one of these hardworking people, say, at Walmart or somewhere, how do you communicate with a person who is different from you? What would you talk to those people out in the audience about how to speak with people who might communicate a little differently?
Well, I would say, if it's someone that you get to see on a regular basis at the grocery store, just take the time. As I said, we have four different levels of care, and in our level where people have the most need for support, so we're assisting with things like bathing, eating, and dressing. They can't get out of bed and eat breakfast without our support. Those folks tend to be nonverbal, but they communicate really clearly. It's just they're not going to say, hey, my stomach hurts. They might, their eyebrows might get close together and they'll frown and they'll put their hand on their stomach. And they're being really clear to us. If they're typically a happy person who's laughing a lot and suddenly they're frowning and their hand is on their stomach, that's pretty clear something's wrong and the area where it is. And, I just encourage people to slow down a little bit and take some time to listen and pay attention. And it's fun. I really enjoy feeling like there is this part of our community that kind of forces me to slow down and listen a little more carefully and pay attention to the whole person, not just the words that are coming out of their mouth, but their actions. And my main advice is just slow down and listen and don't give up.
Well,
because
yes.
People do, everything is easy with practice. And there's a woman who she was a donor of Reach, and I convinced her to come work for us because we had, last year at this time, we had a 34% full-time equivalency vacancy rate, which was very troublesome. And one of our donors said, "What can I do to help?" And I said, come get a job. And she said, well, I'm so nervous. What if I don't understand people? And I said, well, in your first hour of working, you won't understand them. But by your third shift, there will be no problems.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. Yeah. And she said to me later, I can't believe I was even worried about this.
But we all do when faced with mm-hmm. something that's unfamiliar. And so mm-hmm. maybe we could take a minute. We did this for the IRC recently. Tell us what jobs you have available right now in case anybody out there might want to come and apply.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. That's helpful. Right now, we have a bunch of weekend positions in our houses, which the weekend is a fun time to work with our clients because it's pretty mellow and you get to do a lot of fun stuff. It's different from, helping them find jobs. So we have weekend positions in our houses. I think we have a couple overnights. One job that I'm guessing might be full by the time this comes out, but you can check our website to get more information. But we have a weekday, what we call a work services specialist, and that's a full-time job. Monday through Friday, generally 8 to 5. And you help people gain and maintain employment. That's a fun one, but the day shifts are pretty popular. They fill up faster than weekends, evenings, and overnights. We have a position that's in the house, and I think it's Tuesday through Saturday, 4 p.m. to midnight. I mean, we are 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And so we have a lot of varied shifts. We also have a really fun position that's always open to anyone who's interested, and it's called substitute relief. And that is just filling in whenever there's an open shift. And so for people who travel a lot, that's a really fun job because, you know, if you know you're going to be gone for 3 weeks every month, you just take a shift when it's convenient for you. Or if you're a ski bum and you want to be able to hit the powder when there's more than a few inches, you don't have to work if it's a great ski day. And so that substitute relief position is really fun. And you can also get to know the whole organization because you can fill in anywhere or say, you know, I only want to work with people who are more independent, or I am comfortable with personal care because I had a family member that we did that for. But people get to kind of say what shifts they want and where they want to work. And that's a really good one. We are, I'd say we're a fun place to work. But I'm biased. I've been here a long time. So.
No, I've been in those settings, and I can tell you that it's a great place to work, and it will increase your inner star when you go and work there. You will feel good about your day.
Yeah, and that's one thing I have to say. Our clients, they do appreciate when people show up and care for them, and they can tell. They can tell when someone's got a good heart and wants to help, they want to help back. And it's what's surprising for a lot of people when they come and they think, oh, I'm going to go help these people have better lives, and then their lives get better working here. And it's, you know, people are very often, they kind of underestimate that this support and life enhancement goes in both directions. So
Couldn't agree more.
You mentioned there were four levels of support. Can you go through those again?
Oh, absolutely. So the folks who receive the most care are in what the state designates as intensive services. We're trying to move away from that term just because it feels a little misleading, because it's not intensive. It's actually pretty relaxed. But what it means is the folks who are in our intensive care have 24-hour-a-day support, and the staffing ratios are really high. So there are usually about one staff to every two clients. And the folks who are in that level of support, they need assistance with bathing, eating, and dressing, and in the bathroom. And so for the staff who are on that team and work with those clients, they have to be very comfortable with the human body and with providing some physical support, transferring people in and out of wheelchairs. We do provide training if people don't have experience. But, you know, very often, sometimes people come to us, they've worked in the nursing home, for example, or they've had a family member, you know, with MS who needed assistance. And people will come to us who are already comfortable in that kind of work environment. And then we have the next level up is what's called standard adult care. I don't really like these terms. They come from the state of Montana. But and standard adult care is also 24 hours a day. The staffing ratios are a little lower, and the clients are a little more independent. So to be in standard adult care, a lot of the folks, they can dress themselves, they can bathe themselves, they can feed themselves, they can, you know, count pills and take meds, but they will need assistance from staff. So staff might cook dinner for them, but they'll, you know, scoop it up and put it on their own plate and sit at the table and eat. Staff might prompt them in the shower. So they'll get into the shower and they'll start cleaning themselves, and a staff person will yell, and don't forget to use the shampoo, you know? But there's a little more independence. And sometimes in that level of care, we're assisting with relationships, because in our houses, technically there's four houses, but it's in two buildings because the two houses are townhouses. But in the four houses, there's four bedrooms and four people and a kitchen and two bathrooms and all that. But the folks who live there, they're together a lot. and they haven't picked each other as roommates. So, because they just, you know, you come off a waiting list into this house. And so we have people who live together, and then they ride to our work center on a bus together. And then they, you know, sometimes they'll go to work from here, but then they'll go home again and be together, and they spend a lot of time together. And again, they haven't picked each other. So sometimes we're helping navigate the difficulties of having a roommate that you don't necessarily feel is your best friend every minute of the day. We have some houses where everybody's totally close and they get along, but not every house is that way, because again, there you don't get to say, this is my best friend Joe and I'm going to live with Joe. You say, I'm really grateful to have a spot at Reach, because it's hard to get a spot at Reach. The next level up is what we call transitional living. We have two apartment complexes, and the folks who are in our transitional living, they are pretty independent. You have to have a lot of abstract skills to be in transitional living, because there's only staffing during the day, and the staffing ratios, again, are much lower. So in standard adult, it's usually about one staff to every four clients. In transitional living, it can be 1 to 9. Or 1 to 6. And so you only have daytime support. So to be in our transitional living apartments, folks have to be able to know how to be safe in the kitchen. Like, you can't start a fire every time you cook. You have to know how to exit safely if there's an emergency. So if there is a fire in the kitchen, you know to leave, and you know how to call 911. And you know how to cross the street safely. You know about stranger danger in the community. There's a whole lot of skills that a lot of us don't think about, that people need to be safe when they don't have staff support. And then, as I said earlier, the most independent support is our supported living, where we help with balancing checkbooks and transportation and, again, navigating relationships. The more independent someone is, the more we have to, I don't know how to say this lightly, but work to protect them from the folks in society who are a little sick or dangerous. And so, you know, our clients are very vulnerable to crime. So the more independent they are, the more we have to work to protect them from some of the darker parts of our society. But we do, I think, a pretty good job helping them learn what they need to learn. And people can move into more independent settings. There's some videos on our website of a woman named Amanda, and she came to us at 19 years old and said, I'm going to live in an apartment someday. And she did. She lived in one of our houses. It's called Valley Creek. And she worked really hard to gain skills to be able to be independent. And so there's a video right before she moves, or a few months before she moves into her own apartment. And then a year later, there's another video after she's moved into her own apartment. And that video where she talks about having achieved her goals and being proud of herself and missing her friends at her old house, but also being happier to be more independent. It's so touching. And I've watched that video a ton of times, and I cry every time, because just watching her talk about how proud she is to have worked so hard to be more independent, it meant so much to her. And not everybody has that opportunity. The folks who are in our intensive services, a lot of them are going to be in intensive services for their whole life. They don't have the ability to become more independent today. I mean, I have seen some, you know, medical advancements that were not available when I started in this field a long time ago. And so there are some, like, even just the advancements of medications has helped people be more independent in our services and navigate some mental health issues. So you never know what's coming. But as of today, we have some folks who are where they're going to be. But also we have some people who do get more skills and get more independent. And then we're here for them, too, as they age.
I'm sure you have adaptive devices.
Yes.
What sort of adaptations, like engineering things, whether it be wheelchairs or computers, do you have to help?
Oh, we have all sorts of stuff. Well, all of our buildings are accessible. So, you know, ground level apartments, and then we've made accommodations in some of the apartments and houses so that, you know, people can, if they use a wheelchair, they can get into a sink. So, you know, you have space under the sink to roll up. We have a number of people who use wheelchairs. We have a number of people who use walkers. A lot of people have very typical adaptive equipment like glasses. And we do have some clients who use communication devices like iPads with, you know, that they use to quote unquote talk, you know, mm-hmm. so,
yes.
We have iPads that assist, I'm trying to think. I mean, we have the usual adaptive equipment in bathrooms where there's, you know, extra bars and no step into the shower. And, we have wheelchair accessible vehicles. So a number of our vehicles have wheelchair ramps. And some of them are electric and some of them are just the fold out kind, depending on the size of the vehicle. But, yeah, we have a lot of adaptive equipment, hearing aids, cochlear implants, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I've heard other agencies or other groups that say the Medicaid funding in Montana has been very low to the point that even nursing homes sometimes can't stand existence. Do you guys have trouble with that?
Yes. Yes, we do. And it's in some ways it's quite dire, and in some ways there is hope. So what we were very lucky in 2020 or 21, I can't remember when, we got a PPP loan, which we have been using. So every hour that we work with our clients, we're losing money. We're paid we get a reimbursement rate from Medicaid for working with our clients. And it, you know, depending on the client needs, there's different rates, but they do not come close to covering our costs. And costs have been skyrocketing and the Medicaid rate has not gone up much at all since I've been here 24 years. So we have, we do fundraising here at Reach, but we also are petitioning the legislature for increases. And the good news as of today, there is an increase written into the governor's budget that is historically high. And we're hoping that by April, when everything kind of is officially official, that we will still have quite an increase. But this year we are pulling money out of our reserves to keep going, and we are fundraising as much as we can. We are lucky to live in Bozeman, where there's a very supportive community of our work, and Reach has next year it'll be a 50-year history in this community, and people really do support our clients as much as they can. So we're lucky about that. And we're also in a community here in Bozeman where people do have extra resources that they're willing to share. Not every community has the opportunity to fundraise the way we do. And we're lucky that we're in a community where there aren't only people who have extra to give, but are willing to give it. And so we do a lot of fundraising to supplement our budget.
So would it be helpful for us to urge people in the audience to contact their legislator about supporting your request for increased funding? So everybody out there, we need to contact our legislators, all of the legislators, at least those in our district especially, to ask for them to fully fund this wonderful effort for our community.
Yeah, thank you. And I don't want to say the sky is falling, because I think it's, you know, I like to keep the tone happy, and I don't want to lose any of your listeners, but we do, it is, you know, in Bozeman, a number of nursing homes have closed, and the rest are in danger as well, because that reimbursement rate is low. And a lot of our funding comes from the same place. We have reduced our services a bit, just because, you know, the main problem, since I became executive director, which was in 2020, I have really good timing. I signed the contract at the end of February and COVID showed up in March. Oh. But, you know, I've raised wages 50% because living in Bozeman is so hard. And our reimbursement rate, I think, has gone up 3% maybe. So it's, you know, the expenses are just skyrocketing. And, I don't know what we can do. It's really hard to compete with for-profit organizations that can raise their you know, whatever they charge for their business. We are dependent on the legislature for our reimbursement rates. And we can't just, and the other thing that we cannot do, which I think is good for our clients, but it's really hard on businesses, we can't kick people out of services, which is good. It protects the folks who need us. But again, last year when we had that 34% community employment rate, or excuse me, full-time equivalency vacancy rate, over one in three jobs was open, and entire weekends and overnight shifts. And so only because there were people who were willing to work unbelievable amounts of overtime for months on end were we able to continue to provide care. But again, overtime's not in our budget. And so we've been focusing really hard on recruitment and retention so that we can reduce the costs of overtime. And we have done pretty well. We're down to 18% now, which, if you had told me in 2020 when I became executive director that I'd ever be happy about an 18% vacancy rate for our staff, I would have looked at you like, that's not nice. But we are celebrating that number today.
Well, Dee, I just want to reiterate to our listeners out there, it is the legislature who sets mm-hmm. the Medicaid reimbursement rate in each state. And some states do much, much better. For some reason, we've had people from the nursing home sector speak on the show and people mm-hmm. from the mental health sector speak on the mm-hmm. show. And all of them have said that the reimbursement rates set by our state legislatures do not allow them to even cover expenses. And yet we had quite an overspill this year of surplus money in the legislature, something like $2 billion. So what's going on, legislators? We need some visibility and some transparency and some help here.
Yeah. And there are, there are people who are noticing and listening. And one of the, I don't want to say advantages that we have when talking to legislators, but this support need is something that affects a lot of people, and it's no respecter of political party or belief system or income range. Like, most people know someone with a developmental disability or have a family member with a developmental disability. And I had been at Reach, I think it was 12 years. Let's see, I'm at 24. Yeah. So I had been at Reach 12 years when my sister-in-law found out she was pregnant with a baby with Down syndrome. And I was one of the first phone calls that she made, because she knew that I could have some hope for her about her, unborn daughter's future. And, all of a sudden I was so much closer to my sister-in-law, because we have a common goal, which is creating a very beautiful and hopeful future for her daughter with Down syndrome. We're on the same team, we're working hard for the same cause, and it can come unexpectedly for people. And this young woman with Down syndrome, when my days are really hard, I have, the Reach clients who I care about, obviously, because it's been 24 years. But now also, I have a family member who wants to move to Bozeman. And there is something at MSU, I don't know if you've heard it, called the Life Scholars Program, where people with developmental disabilities can attend MSU. And I don't know a whole lot about it, but you could talk to them on another day. But, I have a niece who might come. She's only 12, so her mind could change 62 times between now and her high school graduation. But she is talking about someday moving to Bozeman, and I want Bozeman to be a place where she can come and thrive.
Exactly.
It's just a little mm-hmm. extra incentive.
yes. And I think, we need to keep in mind that there, every child is all of ours, and that mm-hmm. in our society, caring about one another should be what we're all about.
All the research shows that keeping people healthy or taking care of those with impairments actually saves money if the intervention occurs early, they get good support, saves money on medical bills, on all kinds of bills. Getting them employed helps employers. So from a governmental legislative point of view, it actually makes sense to fund things at their proper level so they can be very functional, can actually, which they love to hear, save people money. So
yes.
I hope someone out there hears that can push the right buttons.
Legislators should know that, but maybe we could help with education there. I was wondering, too, I'm assuming that you have a place for volunteer work at REACH?
Well, we do, but most of the volunteer work is just at our fundraising events because to work with our clients, we have to do a background check, a motor vehicle report, and then we have to invest a lot of training. And so what we encourage people to do is actually become employees. Even if they go on our sub-relief list, as I said, where they're not committing to a regular shift, they're just committing to being part of our community. Because our clients get attached to the people who work with them, and volunteers tend to not stay as long as employees. And there's something about like that donor who is working with our clients now, and she's on the sub-relief list, but working with specifically at one house. So she fills in at one house. She only knows a select number of people very well. She's donating more money to REACH than she's making by a lot, but she's still helping us by providing quality care with someone we trust. Our clients get very attached to people. And one of the things that is, I think, interesting about this work is that, you know, for folks who have disabilities, typically, developmental disabilities, typically, and again, there's 62 exceptions to this rule, but a lot of our clients are comforted by routine and knowing what's coming and who's going to be working with them when and who's going to be doing what. And so one of the things that's been hard these last few years, to be frank, during COVID, when there was a lot of staff turnover and vacancies, is we had people filling in from other places, working extra shifts and working overtime. And so it was very anxiety producing to our clients to not know who is going to be coming in, for example, on Monday night and working with them on Monday when they want to talk to their mom and they want to make sure that whoever's working knows how to dial their mom's phone number, you know?
Sure.
And so consistency is great. So if there is someone who wants to volunteer, there's things like events that are, you know, we have a few fundraisers every year, and that's just kind of a one-time, you know, definitely helpful because we do depend on fundraising. But if someone wants to be a regular part of our community, I would encourage them to actually become an employee and get to know our clients and be part of it for real in a deep way.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Is there any certain age at which people can apply for REACH? And tell us about the application procedures, if you would, Dee.
Yeah, this is another kind of sad part of our situation. So we have not taken anyone new into our services. I don't know. Since I've been executive director, we haven't taken anyone external to our community in, and we've shrunk a little bit. Typically, there's a statewide waiting list, and you can, as a person in the system, folks can say, you know, I want to be either in Bozeman or Havre or Kalispell. Or they can say, I want to be at REACH in Bozeman, or I want to be at Counterpoint in Livingston. And they can, the people who would need our services can decide where they want to get on the waiting list. And then they wait. And the last statistic I heard, which was old, it's like 2019, and I know services have reduced statewide since then, but last I heard there were 2,300 people on the waiting list for services and 2,500 people in services. And I'm guessing that those numbers have probably switched by now, because there's always people coming out of special education onto the waiting list. And there's also people passing away. And I know almost every provider I know, like REACH around the state, is not taking new people because of staffing shortages and the money loss. Every time we take in a new client, we're losing more money. Every hour that we work, we're losing money. So if we take in more clients, we have to fundraise that much more money. So everybody's shrinking a little bit right now. But you have to be at least 18 to be in our services. People with special needs and in the special education program can go on the wait list. I think it's 15 or 16 years old. And we recommend that people get on the wait list as soon as they can. because it is basically you get at the end of a line and you get a number. And I know one of our donors who has a young adult son, he was like, it was in the 2000s, his number on the wait list. And so it's very hard to get into our service. Well, right now it's impossible. We're not taking new clients. But, you know, in a beautiful world where we do get enough funding, I would immediately take on at least a few more people. And I would do that by notifying case management that we have the following slots open. So I might say, you know, we have three places in a standard adult home, or we have, you know, five work services spots open. And we'd let case managers know. They'd send us information about who's on the waiting list. And we would basically see who would fit based both on their position on the waiting list and, you know, the services that we have available to provide. But everybody I know in the state, their services are shrinking right now. And so there's no getting off the waiting list these days as a general rule. I think there are a few providers that are starting to open back up as they get more staff, but not many, and definitely not Reach. So
that
it's kind
of
a bummer.
That is so sad to hear. That is just tragic for some. Just as many are waiting as are in the programs then, basically.
Yes.
But it also points out the great need that is there, that, again, back to the government and legislators, is that they should hear that and know that services are not being offered to a huge number of people that need it badly. So that's always an ongoing struggle, and lobbying is important to let people know. And the priorities, maybe it has to do with priorities. What comes first when you distribute $2 billion? Is it tax breaks, or is it resources for health? But anyway, I guess I could really get on the soapbox, but we know your program does well and needs all the help it can get.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't want to downplay the amount of support we've gotten from our community, because it has been incredible. Just these past few years, there's been some challenges that just nobody saw coming. And, you know, it's just a combination of the stars aligning to our disadvantage, you know, things like housing costs in Bozeman. People can't afford to live on the wages we pay. But we can only raise wages so much without, you know, closing. And we have folks who are depending on us to stay open, so we better do it. And we, you know, the thing that's hard, I mean, there's a lot of things that are hard for me, but one of the things that I think is a little bit sad is some of my greatest reward at Reach has been seeing people come in to our program and change and grow and have their lives get better. And there's a lot of, you know, anyone who works on self-improvement, very often there's a lot of movement early on, and then you settle into who you want to be. And we kind of, the progress slows down dramatically as we get more settled in who we are and how we want to live. But for our clients, when they come into our services, usually there's a lot of goals and there's a lot of very big progress. And we get to see that over time. And for the staff people who've come in the last 3 years, they haven't gotten to see that. Like Amanda, the woman in the video, I think that video makes me cry every time, because I knew her when she was 19 years old. And she was, you know, a typical 19-year-old who was very, she was attention seeking, and her peers were the most important thing, and peer approval was the most important thing, and she was a little bit feisty, and she didn't want to be told what to do, and she settled into, you know, focusing on some goals, and I got to see her achieve them, and I got to see her mature, and I got to be part of her life when that happened. And you know, we haven't had that opportunity for the staff that have come in the last 3 years. They haven't seen anyone new come and progress so quickly into their new home and just kind of thrive. It's just such a beautiful thing to be a part of. And there's been, to be a little bit dark, you know, we've lost a number of people, some of them to age and some of them to illness, but you know, as much as we do the happy stuff, we also do the grief and we do the sickness. And these last few years, it hasn't been balanced. We've done a lot of grief and seeing people through illness and seeing people through the end of their life, but there isn't that, you know, younger generation coming in to balance that out for staff morale. I mean, I don't even know how to say it. I mean, it's hard to love people and then lose them. And there, what I use the word love very carefully because it's professional and it's, you know, it's a work relationship. There's no doubt about that, but there's no way to work with people for 24 years or 10 years or even 5 years at the level that we do without caring about them deeply. And so losing them it's heartbreaking.
I think it's a therapeutic relationship for your residents, but also for those who serve them.
Yes.
Just pure gold. We know that sometimes you have a list of needed items to donate.
Yes.
Maybe go down that list for us a little bit. People could drop things by and you could tell us how to go about getting things to you.
Yes. Well, we have a website, which is reachinc.org, or if you Google Reach Bozeman, hopefully it'll come up. But I'm happy to talk to anyone about what we do. I love talking to people about our work and our clients and giving them tours of our work center. But there is a wish list on our website. And I know right now we could use COVID tests and there are some items we could always use, gloves. We use latex gloves or non-latex gloves a lot. And we could always, it seems silly, but things like, you know, tissues from Costco, toilet paper, like, you know, cause we're putting, how we have houses. And, you know, again, when COVID hit and there was limitations on how much toilet paper people could buy, and we had a house with four clients and at any given time, at least two staff, and you could only have, you know, one package of toilet paper if you were lucky. Things were challenging. So if you think about what you need in your home, we need things like brand new vacuums, and we could always... I'm just trying to think. I mean, if you think about like the stuff in your house that you're replenishing, we're replenishing more than the average house.
Normal household, any of those supplies, cleaning supplies, paper supplies. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we could also go online and check the list. And yep. I wanted to also say that you're on Facebook and yep. that you have a couple of fundraising events. How did the annual art auction go?
Oh, it was delightful. And we raised, I think it was the second biggest fundraiser in Reach's history. The other one was also the art auction in 2020 was kind of the peak. And that happened in 2020. It was, for some people, it was the last event that they went to that was social and out and about before everything closed down. But our art auction was on February 4th, and it helped us out tremendously. And
Work? Where does the art come from? Tell us.
The art comes from very generous people around our community, and actually some throughout the country, because we have family members of staff and clients who donate. But artists give their art and let us keep 100% of the proceeds. And a really fun story is Brenda Stredwick of Iron Maiden Welding. I don't know if you know her. She's been a generous supporter of that event for a long time. She made a couple of hearts, and one of them was in our live auction. And two people got into a bidding war over one of her 3D metal, recycled metal hearts. And a woman ended up winning the heart for quite a bit of money. I think it was $2,100 or something. Woo. And the gentleman who lost said, if she'll make another heart, I'll give $2,000 to Reach. And so Brenda ended up, you know, we kind of tricked people. She had said, yes, I'll donate to Reach. And she made us a couple pieces of art. And then we went back to her and said, would you give us a third? And within a week, it was made and done. She had just gotten back from vacation. And, you know, that's the kind of generosity that we just, it's wonderful. Just having people that we can ask. So the artists donate. And we've had artists who've been donating every year since the event started 12 years ago.
Wow.
And, Yeah, they give us money. And then people, one of the really fun things about the event is at the end, we do a live drive where we just ask people to give money, and they do. And I'm surprised every year.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so. And your other fundraiser is coming up 4th of July. Tell us about that one, please, Dee.
Oh, that is, it's actually my favorite day of the year. It's a 1K, a 5K, and a 10K walk or run, depending on your ability. And it is on the trail system around our Reach Work Center. It's on the northeast side of town. So we hit, for the 1K, 5K, and 10K, you hit the Cherry River fishing area, Cherry Creek fishing area, up on the north side of town. And then for the 5 and 10K, we go around the Rotary Lake. It used to be called the East Gallatin Rec Area. It's right by Matt Brewing and Buffalo Restoration. Uh-huh. And so we go around that lake, and it's a beautiful run. And our clients come to all of our events, and that one has very high participation from our clients. And basically, you know, it's, I think it's $25 or $30 for the race, and you can buy a t-shirt, I think, for another $10. And it's just a really beautiful course. I picked it myself, so I'm biased again.
Okay.
But it's a beautiful course, and most of the time we have good weather. We've done that one quite a number of years. I think we're on, I can't remember if it's 16 years or 15 years, but it's been quite a number of years, and it's just, it's been fun every year. And I mean, I just can't say enough about it. It's a family-friendly event. It's in the morning, so you can start your day off right. And we celebrate the independence of our country and the independence of our clients. It's
really absolutely fun. Well, we are runners by nature, and so we're going to challenge everyone out there. We'll try to make it there and do this 5K. And we'd like to challenge members of the audience to come and meet us and do this wonderful fundraiser. And it's always fun and festive to be at those events. Mm-hmm. And one more thing, we don't want to run out of time here before we let you talk to business owners out there briefly about how they could enlist some of your workers in their places of business in Gallatin Valley.
Oh, we have so many ways. One is employing our clients. I'm not sure, you know, most of our clients who want jobs have them, so it might be hard, but I'm guessing, you know, at some point someone will need a change or something. So employing our clients is great. They come with a work services specialist who assists with training. And if someone wants a new, like you want to add duties on, the work services specialist help. It's, you know, the ADA requires accommodations for disabilities, but we provide a person to take the financial burden off of making those accommodations. So if typically training someone to bag groceries takes 2 hours, but it might take our client 4, our staff person will go in and do the training for those 4 hours. So, you know, the organization would train the staff person and the client for the typical amount of time. And then our staff person would assist the client for any extra time until they have the duties down. So that's, I think that's a really nice piece of the work that we do. We also have a recycling program where our clients go out and pick up recycling and bring it to the recycling place here in town. And that program helps pay, you know, our clients make a really good wage on that. And so if you want to help our clients, joining our recycling program is a good way to do it. Some of our clients, we also have custodial crews where our clients go out and clean offices or businesses, and sometimes that's a way to support our work. We do contract work, so assembly jobs and such in our work center. And so if someone has a mailing or they have, like every acoustic Gibson guitar has a truss rod in it that was assembled by one of our clients, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
And so stuff like that. And then, you know, sponsoring our events. We have, you know, we try to do some logo recognition for that and hopefully help people. There are a lot of folks in our community who will support businesses that support Reach. So we like to let, you know, community members know who supports us. And then sponsoring events. And I feel like I'm forgetting some. Oh, cause marketing. We We frequently do a cause marketing campaign. So for example, we've had like the Daily Coffee Shop has had a special drink where, you know, for every special drink they sell, Reach gets, you know, a dollar or something. And so we kind of advertise that drink special and so we get donations and they get some publicity. And coming up, there's a Bags for Change at Town and Country where if you bring your own bag, they donate 5 cents for every reusable bag to a local nonprofit. And in November, Reach is going to be the recipient of those Bags for Change monies. So, well, you know, stuff like that. That's a really fun way to get our name out there and also raise some money without having to do much.
Yeah. I've got a big bundle of those we'll bring over. Yes.
Okay, I'd like to give a quick testimony to your kind of program. I grew up with a brother who had a cerebral palsy, and he also had developmental disabilities cognitively that went with that. He was 8 years older. He is 8 years older. And I watched him as he was struggling just to live, basically, to survive. He didn't walk well, didn't speak well, had trouble with certain cognitive issues. And I taught him as a much younger child to ride a bicycle, destroyed the bicycle, but he was able to learn to ride it. Repetition was extremely important. He wasn't able to stay in school. This is way back in the early 50s. And they didn't have special ed. And after 2 or 3 years of struggling, he just stayed home. Well, fast forward, we don't have much time, and I'm not going to take much more time. He was living with my mom all those years, 1 year of institutionalization that didn't work out well, at a state school that they used to call School for the Mentally Retarded in Oklahoma. Anyway, Suzanne primarily found a place called Rainbow Hills in Oklahoma City, independent living facility, and we had to lobby to get him in because his IQ level on standardized tests was lower than what they usually accepted. Again, long story short, he was there. She told you the story about after one day we knew it was going to work. He ended up with a best friend, a girlfriend. He was able to ride a four-wheel bicycle to the 7-Eleven on the corner over the years. He was there 22 years. Yes. Did great, independent, worked in the shouldered workshop, as they used to call them. And is now in a nursing home. He's 86. He added 30 plus years of quality life to a 86 year old person's life that he is now. It works. It works well. You're doing a great job. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity to share the message of the importance of our work. It's really great to be able to talk to people and so many people at once. This is a wonderful opportunity for our clients. And for those of us who support them.
By the way, our daughter, who's a psychologist as well, wrote an essay once called Miracle at Rainbow Hill.
She won a prize.
For that.
Yeah. So that prize would go to you, too, for the work that you do and for all of our citizens who can give so much if we just allow them to.
We have a minute and a half. What would you like to add?
I just want to say thank you to everyone who supported our work. And if anyone wants to learn more, they're welcome to call me or email me, dee@reachinc.org. And I'm happy to talk to anyone about what we do.
We can't thank you enough for sharing this valuable information and this wonderful cheer of thinking of all the good that's being done in our community. What we have to work on now is helping those who are on the waiting list. That needs to be rectified. Let's all call our legislators.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank the listening audience, and we'd like to say that you can hear this program on Monday evenings at 7, on Thursday mornings as well, and other times. And you can go to kgvm.org and listen to this program as many times as you want after it is put on the list. You go to kgvm.org, scroll down to Health and Happiness, and you'll see a number of programs, including this one, that has been aired on KGVM. Again, thank you, listening audience. Thank you, Gallatin Valley. Thank you, Dee and Reach. And we will sign off now. Have a good day.